Wouldn't be an episode of AEW Dynamite without having audio issues plaguing the show. I honestly thought that Megatron was invading the show. I thought maybe we would see Starscream. I was keeping an eye out for Optimus Prime. Maybe it's a TBS thing. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to hear from the people who watch this on Fight. If any of you guys have these issues, maybe it's a TBS thing. But glitches aside, tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite was all about pushing WrestleDream, which is coming up this Sunday. It is their tribute to Antonio Inoki. But unfortunately, and I actually thought they did a pretty good job of pushing the key matches they had to push for Sunday. So as a go-home episode of Dynamite, the last Dynamite before WrestleDream, I thought they did a good job of that. But unfortunately, we have some bad news. Because all week, AEW was silent about the status of Adam Cole. Adam Cole, for those who don't know, last week at Arthur Ashe Stadium, he came down the ramp, the elevated ramp, he jumped off the ramp, and he clearly fucked up his ankle. We just didn't know how bad the injury was. He was spotted on crutches, and there were no updates. Tony Khan wouldn't talk about it. He only said that MJF and Cole would be on Dynamite tonight to address the situation. So we went all week without knowing what the status of Adam Cole was. And as it turned out, according to Adam Cole anyway, he broke his ankle in three places, and he tore ligaments coming out of that show last week. This is a situation where you have the best story going in AEW, which is the MJF Adam Cole story. It started back in June. You know, we're now heading into October. And it's been a great story to follow along with, and you still don't know exactly who's going to turn on who. How's it going to turn out? So I've been digging the story. Unfortunately, when it comes to injuries, you do have these situations where injuries can really throw a monkey wrench into your plans. And that's exactly what's happened here. Because the update on Cole really couldn't be any worse. It really is a worst-case scenario if you believe that he is as injured as they said tonight, and it's not all part of a story. Which is certainly possible, it is a worst-case scenario. Because he has to have surgery. He hasn't even had surgery yet. So if everything is on the up-and-up and everything is legitimate, I mean, we're looking at it could be a minimum 6 months. That's a lifetime. And I'm sure they'll find ways to work Cole, you know, as much as he can appear, to try to work him into the shows, and they can do some funny segments, but it's not going to be the same. So the update could not have been worse. However, out of this, what we got tonight was the first setup to an eventual match and a program, which I was not expecting, between MJF and Switchblade Jay White. Now, Switchblade, usually we see him on Collision. We don't see him on Dynamite. So I was not expecting to see him walking to the ring tonight, and let alone seeing them set up something for the future between Cole and Jay White, which I am all in for. I'm very much looking forward to that. So if it is a case where this is not a worked injury, you know, they're trying to make the best of a bad situation, that's one way to do it. To pivot to something with MJF and Bullet Club Gold is not a bad way to try to make chicken salad out of the chicken shit that's been handed to them. We also got a contract signing tonight between Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland for their match on Sunday at WrestleDream. Don Callis and Konosuke Takeshita, they paid a visit to Tokyo to drop in on Kota Ibushi to beat him up, send a message to Kenny Omega ahead of the Trios match on Sunday. And Julia Hart, I have to say this, Julia Hart continues to impress. Every time I see her, Julia Hart in the ring, character work, she impresses me, and she has made great strides over the past year, if you look at her work a year ago as compared to now. And I'm sure a lot of that has to do with her working with the House of Black. Because when you're working directly with people like Malakai Black and Brody King, those are two people, not too bad people to be learning from. I'm sure that's, you know, been a big help to her as well. But it's as much the character stuff as the in-ring stuff. And so we got to see some of that on the show tonight. She has a title match as well on Sunday at WrestleDream. But if you are a fan of the matches generally, if you're a fan of the action here on Dynamite, the matches were fine. The matches were nothing spectacular. It's just, again, nothing that is going to light your world on fire. This probably then wasn't the episode for you. But I think the talking segments were important. And it's okay that not every episode of Dynamite is going to have in-ring bangers every single week. You know what? That's what Collision is for. That's what the Saturday show has become. So I thought they did a good job pushing the matches that they needed to push here on this show. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, September 27th, 2023. Dynamite opened with an open challenge for the AEW International Championship with the new champion, Rey Fénix, defending against 85-time champion, Jeff Jarrett. That's what Tony Khan tweeted before the show. I didn't go on cagematch.net to count it out myself because, you know, who the fuck is going to do that? So I'll take their word for it that Jeff Jarrett is an 85-time champion. Considering how long he's been around for, it wouldn't surprise me if he is an 85-time champion. Jon Moxley was not on the show tonight. He was not medically cleared, nor will he be for the pay-per-view on Sunday. Jon Moxley was not supposed to lose the international title last week at Grand Slam. He got concussed during his match with Rey Fénix. He wrestled another 10 minutes, realized he was hurt, called an audible. Fénix became the champion. That was not the plan. Apparently, though, that upset plans that Tony Khan had for Dynamite and for WrestleDream. And so this is a report that I want to read to you real quick here from Fightful. Fightful is reporting that the finish being changed not only impacted the match, but caused immediate changes to Dynamite and possibly WrestleDream on Sunday, as original plans called for a non-AEW wrestler to come to Dynamite and challenge Moxley for the title at WrestleDream. Once the match result was changed, it nixed the match challenge. It is unclear who the surprise challenger was supposed to be. And when I hear that, the first thought I had, honestly, was Sami Callihan. Because I don't know if how many of you saw it, but Sami Callihan posted this week that as of September 30th, as of this Saturday, he is going to be a free agent. He's been with Impact now for a number of years. Sami Callihan and Jon Moxley are like this. They're very tight. So I could, and this is just me speculating here, but I could see a situation where, you know, Impact would have allowed him to appear on Dynamite on Wednesday. Saturday, he's a free agent, and he shows up at WrestleDream, and we get Callihan and Moxley. But again, that was my first thought, just because I know the two of them are friends, and he is about to become a free agent. Now, once the heels made their way down to ringside, Fénix dove from the top rope onto them. And he and Jeff Jarrett, they fought at ringside. Fénix had a running hurricanrana on the floor on Jay Lethal. That sent Lethal forward, head first, into the crotch of Satnam Singh. Jarrett put Fénix down with a DDT heading into a picture-in-picture break. There were some very ugly spots here in this match. This was a rough match. Mainly because Jarrett just, I mean, how old is Jarrett at this point? You know, you put him in the ring with somebody like Rey Fénix, and Fénix has to slow his shit down. And what makes Rey Fénix so dynamic is his speed and some of the crazy spots that he does when he's in the ring, and it's hard to do with somebody like Jeff Jarrett, who's a lot older than him. So Jarrett wasn't really able to keep up with him. Then it just turned into the usual Jarrett overbooked mess. Interference from Jay Lethal, interference from Sanjay Dutt. We had interference from Satnam Singh. Jarrett hit a low blow behind the referee's back, got a near fall out of it. Then he hit the stroke. And Fénix had to visibly reposition himself and move himself closer to the ropes before the referee started counting so that he can get his foot under the bottom rope, which he barely did in time. Jarrett tried for a figure four, but he got pulled into an inside cradle, and Fénix got the win to retain the title. Now, Fénix seemed to be selling a hip injury. He was selling some kind of a lower body injury when the match was over. And the announcers played up how much of a disadvantage he would be at next week against the winner of the triple threat match later in the show that they were holding between Nick Jackson, Brian Cage, and Claudio Castagnoli. Because next Wednesday is the 4-year anniversary episode of Dynamite. And which is hard to believe. I mean, when you think about what this company has done in 4 years, it really is very impressive. 4 years later, we are going to be getting a match. I guess I'm spoiling the match later in the show, but we're getting a match between Rey Fénix and Nick Jackson, which we had on one of the early episodes. I think they said it was episode 8 of Dynamite back in 2019, and they tore the house down the last time they were in the ring together. You know, Nick Jackson is somebody who doesn't wrestle singles matches very often. I think they said that this is going to be his fourth one the entire time he's been in AEW. So can't go wrong with that. But honestly, you couldn't go wrong with any of the three who were in that match later in the show. Now, somebody in the chat mentioned Britt Baker's Twitter page. So I will ask you, because I don't have it open in front of me right now, to give me an update if there was some sort of update that she posted relative to Adam Cole, because that is something I would like to know about. In fact, I think I might go check it out right now myself, just to see what it is if she posted something, because I saw somebody mention Britt. So let me just check real quick here and see if, in fact, there is an update. Oh, wow. Well, there you go. Yeah, so she has photos up right now on her Twitter page, or X, or whatever you want to call it, of Adam Cole's ankle, and it looks very gnarly. And she has the X-ray up as well. So I didn't think the whole thing was a work. I didn't buy into that. But this seems to confirm the fact that he is, he fucked himself up. And just think about it. Wasn't even in a match. He didn't even have a match on the show last week. He came out at the very end of the main event. And all he did was just jump off that stupid ramp they had, the elevated ramp to the ring. And just like that, an entire storyline. All the months they pumped into this story with MJF and Adam Cole defending the Ring of Honor tag team titles, all down the drain. Now, they'll recalibrate, you know, they'll find a way to change the story accordingly. They're not going to, you know, abandon the entire story, but they were putting everything into this. And all it takes is one freak accident like that to just completely fuck everything up. It's unbelievable. So if any of you were doubting the seriousness of the injury, you can go on her Twitter. She's got those photos up right now. Speaking of which, we had a video that aired of Adam Cole on crutches after injuring himself. Last week, he was standing on a dock on Long Island somewhere. MJF was behind him on a boat, and he invited Cole to join him. Cole asked if it was MJF's boat, and he said that it belonged to his father, but that schmuck doesn't need to find out, except for the fact that this is airing on national television. Yeah, I mean, Tomas, that's a great point. That's kind of the point that I was making. For all the criticism that a lot of talent in AEW get, for all the flips and all the crazy spots, you know, that we see, Moxley got concussed last week. But there's a lot of people on the AEW roster in particular who will do a lot of crazy shit and take a lot of risks in their matches. Look what Darby Allin puts himself through every single week. How is he not walking around in a body cast every week? And here's a situation where all Adam Cole did was just jump down from the ramp. Any movement, any kind of action out there in the ring is dangerous. Because all it takes is, you know, you land wrong, you plant your foot wrong, and that's it. That's all it takes. But it is kind of amusing for all the talk about all the dangerous spots and the dangerous moves that this is what did Adam Cole in. Unbelievable. So they're on the boat. They're on a boat. As they were enjoying their fishing trip, MJF showed some frustration with Cole. Because he said, you were on the phone an awful long time last week with Roderick Strong, and you didn't come out for my match until much later on towards the end of the match. So Cole says, look, I was just worried about him. MJF asks Cole, he goes, hold his beer. He's going to go grab another beer for Adam Cole. You want another one? He goes, sure. He's going to go grab another beer out of the cooler for Adam Cole. So he goes over to the ice chest, he opens it up, and he pulls out his Dynamite Diamond Ring. I don't know if he was keeping the ring on ice, but he pulls out the Dynamite Diamond Ring. He puts it on his hand. Now, Cole is sitting down. His back is turned. See, he's not actually, he can't see this, but he senses something. And he could tell that something was a little off about this. And he asked Max, did you bring me out here just to hit me with the Dynamite Diamond Ring and toss me overboard? And MJF says, it's the last thing I would do. That's insane. At the same time that he's hiding the diamond ring. And Cole tells him, look, it's healthy to have more than one friend. I know this whole friendship thing is new to you, but it's normal. It's natural to have more than one friend. Doesn't mean I don't care about you. MJF says that it's your deal. If you're cool with it, I'm cool with it. He says, besides, I almost got caught once the last time trying to toss somebody overboard. So this is great. And at that moment, Cole catches something on his fishing line. And it's something big. So MJF comes over and he's trying to help, you know, whatever it is. They're trying to reel it in. And then the camera cuts to the water and we see a shot of Big Show dressed up as Captain Insano in a rubber ducky floaty. Just happens to be in the water here on Long Island. I guess Captain Insano has he's got a place over in Plainview, I guess. So they caught Captain Insano. And after that, they pulled him ashore. They pulled him aboard the boat. They shared a beer with him, and he told them, hey, better than you, baby, you guys are all right. So this was played up for cheesy comedy, but I enjoyed this. And clearly, Tony Khan might be a Sopranos fan, because anybody who watched this segment, and I know they did something like this, some kind of spoof on South Park once, I think with Eric Cartman, but this is a Sopranos scene with Tony when he was contemplating throwing Paulie overboard. He almost did. He thought about it. He had evil intentions. I'm grateful that he didn't. That would have sucked. I'm glad that Paulie made it. I like to think that Paulie had a nice retirement for himself at the end of the show. He's doing okay. Although I know the actor who played him, I know, passed away, I think, last year. But I enjoyed this. The Captain Insano cameo. It was fun. It was a fun, silly thing, and it served a purpose because, again, it was highlighting potential issues between MJF and Adam Cole, which, in hindsight, what the fuck does it even mean? I mean, given the situation, but I thought this was fun. Now, we had a shot of Don Callis with Konosuke Takeshita. They were walking the streets of Tokyo looking for Kota Ibushi last Saturday night. They were hunting Ibushi, and Callis said maybe Kenny Omega will have to find a new partner for Wrestle Dream if they can get rid of Ibushi. That led into the next segment, which was Renee, who was looking quite good, I must say. In the ring tonight, she was in the ring to interview Don Callis and Konosuke Takeshita. She could barely get her question out through all the booing before Callis started speaking. He brought out the newest member of the Callis family, Sammy Guevara. And out comes Sammy Guevara. He's got this Hawaiian-looking button-down shirt that's mostly unbuttoned. He's walking out there looking like Razor Ramon in those early vignettes when he first started in the WWF, which in and of itself was a copy of Al Pacino and Scarface. Fucking Tony Montana walking out here to the ring, only not nearly as cool. Don wanted to talk about Tokyo, though, and he told us that Kota Ibushi was not safe and he's got some footage that he would like to show us. So we see Don and Takeshita, they're entering Ibushi's dojo. And one of Ibushi's students is in the ring, and he tells Don that Ibushi, he'll be out in 2 minutes. So Don smacks him in the face. Takeshita attacks this poor guy. Here comes Ibushi, though, to stop him. And he checks on his student, but here comes Takeshita on the attack. Callis hits Ibushi from behind with an umbrella. And Ibushi no-sells this. He gets up, he's stalking Don Callis. That gives Takeshita enough time to recover, and he picks up a kettlebell. So when Ibushi turns around, he gets hit right in the head with it. He didn't do a blade job, though. But he did wrap his leather jacket around Kota's neck. He choked him out, as Don yelled that he is not safe in Tokyo or in Seattle. So Sammy got some mic time. He told us, I'm not the villain, Jericho's the villain. Jericho was supposed to pass him the torch, but he was never going to do it. He had to take the torch himself, and now it's time for him to be the champion and the star that he was born to be. And Callis says that at Wrestle Dream, they're going to take everything from Ibushi, Jericho, and Omega until there is nothing left but tears. So this was fine. I was a little worried there for a second that they did that angle with Ibushi because they were going to take him out of the match. And maybe he was hurt. He wasn't going to be able to make it to the pay-per-view. But he is still scheduled to be at the pay-per-view. And I said this on the podcast on Sunday. The use of Ibushi in AEW so far, exclusively in multi-man matches or trios matches, has to have something to do with the fact that either he's still not 100% fully healed from his injuries, or they just don't trust him enough yet in a single situation. That's what I think. So that's why we're getting another trios match on Sunday. Now, we got footage that aired of Bryan Danielson and Ricky Starks. They were shaking hands after Collision went off the air after their Texas Death Match. Starks was backstage after the match. He had some dried blood on his face. Big Bill was with him. Starks said that Danielson never pinned him. So he should still be ahead of Danielson in the rankings. Yes, those imaginary rankings that AEW did away with a couple of years ago. Wheeler Yuta showed up. He said that he was wrong to put his hands on Starks when he was trying to show Danielson respect. Starks barked at him, called Starks an entitled prick, and then challenged him to a match at WrestleDream, which Tony Khan later made official. And so finally, a match that Ricky Starks can actually win, and he absolutely should win on Sunday against Wheeler Yuta. I mean, if he can't beat Wheeler Yuta, then he may as well pack it up. That's it. Ricky's been in the ring with CM Punk. He's been in the ring with Bryan Danielson. If he can't beat Wheeler Yuta, that's it, man. It's all over. Start counting down the days on the contract. So we had Nick Jackson, Brian Cage, and Claudio Castagnoli in a three-way to decide the challenger for the international title on next week's four-year anniversary episode of Dynamite. There was a lot going on here. I'm not going to recap all of it, but all three men had a chance to shine, including Cage, who, you know, Brian Cage is the perennial loser in these matches. He goes in there, he does some impressive power spots, but invariably, he's usually the one looking up at the lights, and so this match really was no different. But he showed some impressive feats of strength here in this match. Cage caught, or was caught, in the corner. There was a double stomp to Claudio that led to a rolling backstabber on Brian Cage by Nick Jackson. And as Nick was posing, Claudio met him with a running boot. That took us into the picture-in-picture. After the break, Cage planted Claudio with a released German, but Nick Jackson was there to meet him with a step-up knee strike and a bulldog. Jackson hit a 450 splash on Cage for two. Claudio sent Jackson crashing to the floor, and then he connected with the giant swing on Cage. Which, again, Cage is a big guy. So that was impressive to see him hit the, I think he got about 10 revolutions on that giant swing. Only got a two count out of it. Jackson sent Castagnoli outside, but a crossbody off the top got caught by Cage, who turned it into an F5 for a near fall. Cage connected on his suplex from the apron back into the ring on Claudio, which will never not be impressive. And Claudio... Look, Claudio is no small man, so that was a very impressive spot. Jackson and Claudio, they took turns connecting with super kicks and uppercuts on Cage until Claudio hit a pop-up uppercut on Nick Jackson. We got the anvil elbows on Brian Cage. That led to a Ricola bomb, but Jackson flew in with a springboard hurricanrana that sent Claudio to the floor, and he stole the pin on Brian Cage to win the match. Nick Jackson, as I said before, has only had about four singles matches in all these years on AEW television. So it's nice to separate the Bucks every now and then. It's just it's something different instead of just seeing the Young Bucks in there doing their thing. It's nice to separate them out. And you know, if you give me the choice of which Buck I'd like to see in there with Rey Fénix, it's Nick Jackson over Matt Jackson. We got a video package for The Righteous, who are scheduled to challenge MJF and Adam Cole on Sunday at WrestleDream for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles. They addressed their opponents on Sunday. They said, "Karma has no deadline and they've done nothing wrong. It's easier to forgive your enemies than it is to forgive your fake friends." And that brought us to the key segment here on this show, which was the AEW world champion MJF and Adam Cole out to the ring. Cole was on crutches and his left leg nearly up to the knee was in a cast. And Cole got a seat in the ring. MJF got a chair so he could take a seat. And we got story time with Adam Cole. And unfortunately, he had a sad chapter to share with us. He said that his ankle broke in three different places when he jumped off that ramp last week on Dynamite. He also tore ligaments, and unfortunately that means he has to have surgery. So again, he hasn't even had the surgery yet. And that's a serious injury. I mean, if he broke his ankle in three places and tore ligaments, you're talking about an extended layoff here. You know, Kofi Kingston, I think, I don't know if he broke his ankle. I think he may have broken his ankle. He had surgery earlier this year. That kept him out for several months. AJ Styles broke his ankle, and he missed a long time, actually, with that injury. This sounds even more serious than that. So, it sucks. It is a worst-case scenario It's a devastating blow to Tony Khan and AEW at a time when they're pushing this as their biggest story on television. And honestly, it was the best thing going on the show. Now they have to pivot and they have to go in a different direction. And eventually they can circle back around to this. But you never know. You know, if they come back to this where Cole is physically able to be back on television months from now, you know, is MJF still going to be the champion? Are people still going to be as up for this story as they are now? I think they will be, but you never know. You know, with the passage of time, people move on. It's a risk. So it sucks, and it was the worst news that we could have gotten out of this. But he said that he was going to do everything in his power to get back as soon as possible. But because they are the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, they have to relinquish, and then before he could go on, MJF cut him off and said, hold up a second. Hold up one second. Said he knows that Cole didn't have his kosher ass wrestle twice just to relinquish those titles due to the Righteous, or to the Righteous. He said Cole would not be hurt right now if he didn't need him at Grand Slam, so he felt guilty. He felt a sense of responsibility here for what happened, and Cole tried to tell him, no, it's not your fault. He also knows how much those Ring of Honor tag team titles mean to him, and he wants to make sure when he comes back here, which he will, because he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, one of the best wrestlers of all time, he said, these will be waiting for you. And he said, hey, Righteous, I'm going to defend these titles against you on Sunday in a handicap match. So the match is technically still on, only it's MJF 1-on-2 against the Righteous. We'll get back to that because I think that may change. All of a sudden, we had the shrieking of Adam over and over again. And it's Roderick Strong. He's in his wheelchair, in his neck brace, wheeled out on stage by the Kingdom. On the back of his wheelchair, when they eventually rolled him out, they zoomed in on a shot. He has a sign on the back of his wheelchair that said, Hot Roddy. And it had the hashtag NextStrong on it. So MJF said that as much as he thinks Roddy is nothing but a simp, he learned a lesson on that boat. He says, he's your boy. MJF may not like it, but he respects it. So he tells Cole, go do what you need to do, and I'll be waiting here for you when you come back. Cole stood up. He and Max hugged. Cole left the ring. Roddy got wheeled off, and MJF was all alone in the ring by himself when we heard Bullet Club Gold's music and the music of the Switchblade. Jay White and Bullet Club Gold comes out. Jay White, Juice Robinson, the Guns, even Cardboard Cutout Jay White was with them. But Jay White sent them to the back. He sent them backstage, and he came down to the ring all by himself. He told MJF to shut up. Said everybody would like to hear his sweet, exotic accent for a change. MJF told him, you must be smoking some strong Colorado grass, since they were in Colorado tonight. So that got a weed chant from the crowd. There you go. He said that mid-mic work isn't going to work with him, and when you come for the king, you best not miss. And then MJF insulted his goatee. He compared it to pubic hair. Now, we had a chant of weed, and that wasn't even the weirdest chant on this show. Well, I guess there's nothing weird about it, but normally you wouldn't expect the crowd to break into a chant of weed. Unless they see Vince McMahon coming out of the weeds. But here, we got a chant from the crowd of pubic hair. Now that is a chant I was not expecting. I cannot say that when I started watching the show tonight, I was expecting this crowd to be chanting pubic hair. But that is what they started doing. MJF said that he's always been compared to a lot of people, and it's always been, sure, MJF's good, but he's not blank. And as he got better and he proved a lot of people wrong, people started moving the goalposts. They kept moving. And it never bothered him until he heard, well, MJF is good, but he's no Jay White. And that bothered him. Now that they're standing eye to eye, it's become very apparent to him why it bothered him. He said, he's like a fine filet mignon. Says, if you got filet on a plate, sure, you can have a lot of crap on the plate around it, but it's all about the filet. He said, Jay White is very talented, but even the smartest of wrestling fans, you've managed to convince them that you're filet mignon, when in reality, you're tofu, Funny thing about tofu, it takes on the flavor of whatever you want it to, but you need to add something to it to trick yourself into believing that it actually has taste. Jay White, you have been given everything. The cool entrance, the cool nickname, the cool theme music, big match opportunities. You were handed the keys to one of the greatest wrestling factions of all time. However, if he plucks it all away, he's left with nothing but boring, bland, tasteless tofu. And now here you are trying to hop on my plate, steal some of the champ's flavor. And I don't even mind because I see through you. Because you're all hype. You're the vision of what someone in Japan thought was a top guy. So here's some advice from a real top guy. I would leave the ring and I would damn sure not be talking smack to my pores. Because if you don't, for the rest of your career, whenever our names are mentioned in the same sentence, it'll read like this. Sure, Jay White is good, but he's no Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Because I'm better than you, and you know it. So then it was Jay White's turn to respond. And he said that's what he came out here for. He came out here for his own personalized, authentic MJF experience. But he's a little bit let down. Something's a little off about you these days. He said, I think you're a little bit distracted by your new bromance with Adam Cole. And he doesn't think the fans love him the way that they love Cole. And this whole situation with Adam Cole, it's kind of his fault. Kind of Jay White's fault. And he explains that if he didn't temporarily end Cole's career after the first Forbidden Door, and that's a nice little callback there, because if you remember, on the first Forbidden Door show last year, they had a four-way for the IWGP title. And that was the match where Adam Cole suffered a really bad concussion. I don't remember the exact spot, but he got concussed and he was gone for a long time, and he thought his career might be over. He missed months and months and months. And so I like that he's bringing it back. Like, there's actual history here, because I had forgotten about that he was part of that match. So he said, if that doesn't happen, maybe you don't have a soft spot for him. And everything that you end up doing together doesn't happen, including Cole nearly breaking MJF's neck at Wembley Stadium. So he probably looks at Cole's broken ankle as payback, basically. White says MJF calls himself the devil. Nobody is on the level of the devil. He says he's taking the thing that matters the most to him. He says, I'm the man who sold out Madison Square Garden. I'm the man who sold out the United Center. And he, not MJF, will be a truly elite champion when he peels that title away from his carcass, and then he can go sulk with all of his loser pores. At the end, they will have you will have them, and he will have the Triple B. We can all breathe with the Switchblade. He says, this is the Switchblade era, and MJF has gone soft. And as soon as he said that, MJF freaked out, and he was ready to throw down. He started taking his shirt off, and Jay White at that point bailed out of the ring. So there's a lot to unpack here. I was worried that they were dead silent all week about the Adam Cole stuff. And so this was my worst fears realized as far as how bad the injury was. Is it possible that the injury is a work? Because there are a lot of people online who are already saying, no, I think it's a work, or it's embellished and he's not that hurt and he's going to, you know, him and Roddy are going to gang up on MJF or something. First of all, that just would not make sense. For the story, for that to be the direction of things, seems very convoluted to me. And so what that sounds like to me are a lot of people having hope, either that Adam Cole is not as injured as they claim, or thinking they know everything, and to them, every fucking thing is a work. Everything is a work. Doesn't matter what. So I think you fall into one of two camps. I'm not neither one of those camps, especially after the Britt Baker post that I saw on Twitter. He's really hurt. And so Tony Khan and MJF and all of them, they had to pivot in a new direction. So what they said here is that on Sunday at WrestleDream, it's going to be MJF in a handicap match. I think we end up seeing Roderick Strong as a substitute for Adam Cole. I think he makes the offer. I think we had MJF on this show talking about how, all right, you know what? I don't like this guy. He's a simp. He's this, he's that. But if he's your friend, I'm okay with it. And so I could see Roddy manipulating his way into taking Adam Cole's spot as MJF's tag team partner for the Ring of Honor tag team titles. And that would actually make a lot of sense for this reason. Because eventually we are going to get a Ring of Honor tag team title match with the kingdom. And so at some point, at, you know, Roderick Strong will effectively cost, they'll throw the match, and he'll effectively cost MJF the titles that he said he was going to hold on to until Adam was ready to come back. So I could see Roddy manipulating his way into that spot and eventually being the catalyst for a title change, and then the kingdom become the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champion. So I would keep an eye out for that on Sunday. That may not end up being a handicap match after all. The Jay White promo. The Jay White promo definitely felt a little long to me. But the idea of a Switchblade MJF program, whatever minute criticism I may have of the length of the promo, which again is just minor, because I enjoyed it, you know what? More than makes up for it, the fact that we're getting an MJF Switchblade Jay White program at some point. The thing I really liked about the Jay White promo, though, in a lot of these MJF promo, and MJF is fantastic, and I thought he was really good here too, but like the stuff like the pubic hair and that kind of stuff, like he'll go for the cheap heat sometimes in these promos. Jay White didn't do that. You know, he didn't kind of stoop to his level. He went out there, he explained who he is and why he thinks he's such a big deal, and he staked his claim as somebody who is next in line, and he's going to take the AEW World Championship. So I thought, you know, I enjoyed that aspect of the promo because he got a lot of time out there. Again, maybe too much. I think that and what preceded it, you know, doing it back to back, it made for a very long segment. But this was effectively his first real major promo on the main show, you know, on Dynamite. So he has to go out there and just let people know who may not know who he is. And I'm not sure how many AEW fans at this point are left who don't know who Jay White is. But for him to go out there and kind of state his mission statement, he's making MJF his target. He's coming for the title. And I thought it was very effective. So this was only the first shot fired in this. I want more between these two. This is just the first taste between these two on TV. This sets him up, though, seemingly as the next challenger, I would guess, for Full Gear. Right? Full Gear is the next pay-per-view after WrestleDream. Full Gear is not until mid-November. So WrestleDream is October 1st. They have all of October and half of November, which I think is a good amount of time to really build to that first match, the first of what I think will end up being multiple matches between MJF and Jay White. So I'm very much looking forward to that. If that was kind of a backup plan in light of Adam Cole's injury, because I honestly don't believe that the plan all along was for MJF to work with Jay White. I think that the Adam Cole injury really just upended their plans. And as a backup plan, this ain't bad. This is not bad. And I think the match is going to be great, but I think Full Gear is probably the date of that first match. And that will mark 1 year as the AEW World Champion for MJF. But again, a shame about what happened with Adam Cole. There's never a good time for an injury, but boy, you talk about bad timing. The timing could not be any worse. And it's a pretty gnarly injury, too. Again, for those of you joining late, pop on over to Britt Baker's Twitter. She's got some pictures up of what the ankle looks like. It's not good. Now, Jim Ross, earlier in the day, had a sit-down interview backstage with Christian Cage, officially now the new TNT champion. He pinned Luchasaurus on Collision last week to officially win the title. And the challenger for the title in the 2 out of 3 falls match on Sunday, Darby Allin. So JR talked about Christian winning the title on Collision, and this confused Christian, who said that he retained the title on Saturday. This guy's, he's brilliant. Christian is brilliant. Just never misses a step. He said the times he's been pinned by Darby were all flukes. No titles were on the line. He knows in his heart that Darby is nowhere near the man or the wrestler that he is, and he hopes that Darby is prepared to let his family down at WrestleDream. And he asked if Darby's uncle is going to be there. He said, oh, right, I forgot. He sounded like a great guy. Taking his five-year-old nephew out while intoxicated, and he asked Darby, what happened? And Darby said, he's dead. His uncle is dead. He said, everybody you talk shit about is dead. But Darby is not afraid of dying or losing in his hometown. Darby told... Cage told Darby to bring his entire family, bring Nick Wayne, bring his mom, who Christian said he would call since he has her digits. Darby said that Cage should leave the dinosaur at home on Sunday. Christian told him that Nick Wayne needs a real mentor. He needs a real champion, not somebody who paints up his face and hides behind it. So this bothered Darby. And Darby reached down and he picked up a water bottle and splashed it on his face, which, you know, looked like it thrilled Jim Ross. And he started wiping some of the face paint off. And he got really intense, Darby did. And he said that Christian said he doesn't need Luchasaurus to show Darby who he really is. And Christian is the TNT champion. Darby has to get used to it. I didn't see the very end of this promo, or there were some parts of this that I missed, because this is where the audio went on the fritz. This is where I thought we were having some kind of alien invasion. So there were parts of this that I missed, but I got the gist of it. And this is one of the matches that I'm looking forward to on Sunday, very much so. Darby and Christian, well, 2 out of 3 falls, is going to be...
Thank you, and shoosh. Thank you, and shoosh, and thank you.
Oh, thank you, M. Mills, indeed. There's no shooshing her. Thank you, Michelle. Kind of scared me, not going to lie. Was not expecting that. So this is the match I'm one of the matches, I should say, not the only match, but this is one of the matches I'm looking forward to most on Sunday. Christian has been in the midst of, I would argue, if not his best run, his second best run. Because I always go back to that great run he had with Randy Orton in 2011 and the matches they had and the story they told. And it's hard for me to not put that at number one. But Christian, in this run, in this heel run that he has been on in AEW, and now being the fake TNT champion, now he's the real TNT champion, he's been fantastic. There is absolutely nothing redeemable about him. You know, some guys want to go out there, they want to be the cool heel, or there's nothing about Christian that makes you want to cheer for this guy. Whether it's the turtleneck, whether it's insulting dead people, or any of the other stuff that he does and the stuff that he says, he is a completely irredeemable, despicable character. He is the best heel in AEW. He's been fantastic. So, and he can still go in the ring, which is why I think this match on Sunday is going to be really good. Their match being in Seattle, ordinarily I would say this is going to be a win for Darby, right? The happy ending here. But the fact that Darby, for those who don't know, the fact that Darby is off to Switzerland next month, and then going to China in November, he's starting to train for his Mount Everest climb. And so if that's the case, and he's going to be out of the country for an extended period of time, I don't see the point in doing a title change here. You just put the title on Christian officially. Why are you going to take it off him immediately? He's one of the best parts of the show. In fact, now that the Cole and MJF story has been derailed, he may be the best part of the show. But if Darby is not going to be around, there's no point in taking the title off of Christian. And also, I think you're going to have a lot of people talking about the fact that WrestleDream is on October 1st. And Christian has a certain friend whose contract with WWE, assuming it hasn't been renewed, is set to be up at the end of September. So technically, I think as of this Sunday, as of this weekend, Edge would be free and clear of his WWE commitments, unless, again, something has been signed and nothing's been said yet, but I'm sure that'll get some people talking also. If Christian really is going to leave Luchasaurus at home, and they're going to go one-on-one, and Christian's going to win, assuming he cheats in some way, could we see an Edge debut on Sunday helping Christian, debuting as a heel and helping Christian retain the TNT title? That would be interesting. And I just put that out there as a possibility. We had a four-way match with Orange Cassidy, Penta, Matt Jackson, and Austin Gunn, four of the men in the four-way match. There's a four-way tag match at WrestleDream this Sunday for a shot, a future shot. They haven't said when. They've only said a future shot at the AEW World Tag Team titles. So this was the battle for momentum heading into Sunday. Always love these battles for momentum here. Gunn tried for a powerbomb. Orange Cassidy hit a destroyer. If you love destroyers, then this was the match for you. All four men get back up. They all go down. Referee starts the count. Penta's the first one up. He goes after Matt Jackson. Orange Cassidy helps Matt drop Penta with an inverted DDT. Jackson hit Stereo Northern Lights suplexes while pinning Orange Cassidy, with his own legs. Only gets a near fall. Matt goes for the BTE trigger. Penta blocks it. He goes for the Fear Factor, but no. Matt counters, and Penta hits the ropes, sling blade to Austin Gunn. Orange punch to Penta. He blocks a kick, though, from Matt. Hits the beach break. But here comes a famouser to Orange Cassidy. He covers, only gets a near fall. So then Austin covers Matt, and he gets one, and he gets two. Only a near fall. Covers Penta. One, two, only gets a near fall. This kid was trying to steal a win here any way he could, and he didn't have any luck. So they end up delivering a triple super kick to Austin Gunn. And for the finish, Austin pulls Penta out of the ring. Orange Cassidy hits the orange punch and covers Matt Jackson to win the match. So not a good night for the other Jackson brother. His brother is victorious. He is not. Yeah, this was wild. It was a wild match like the three-way earlier, but I enjoyed the three-way match more. Of the two matches, I enjoyed that one better on the show. We had Willow Nightingale one-on-one with Julia Hart, the obligatory women's match. That they always stick in here, usually in the second-to-last segment on this show. Julia Hart comes out, and she has Brody King with her in her corner, as she has had him in the lately in her corner. No Malachi Black, he's been out hurt. Buddy Matthews has been off TV, so we've been seeing Brody King managing her, basically, and coming down to the ring with her for her matches. Willow came into the match. Willow came into the match injured, storyline injured. She had one eye completely wrapped and all bandaged up from Julia's mist the other night. During the match, Willow's bandage slipped, and you could see the black makeup on her eye. Julia took a powder outside the ring, and she climbed under the ring right in front of Brody King. Willow headed outside, went face-to-face with Brody. Julia emerged from under the ring and clipped Willow's knee, heading into a picture-in-picture break. Late in the match, Willow put Julia down with a pounce. She followed up by tying Julia up in a tree of woe, and when Willow came in for a cannonball in the corner, Julia sat up. And so Willow got nothing but turnbuckles, and then Julia hit a picture-perfect top-rope moonsault to put away Willow Nightingale, fair and square, right in the middle of the ring. After the match was over, Julia put Willow in her submission hold. Chris Statlander ran down to the ring, chased Julia out of the ring, and when she went after Julia, Julia hid behind Brody King. Julia is getting a shot on Sunday at Chris Statlander's TBS championship, so she had to win this match. And the loss does nothing for Willow. It doesn't hurt Willow at all. Willow came in, you know, supposedly injured. Julia's been on a roll. Julia has been undefeated since last year. I want to say last April. And the last person that she lost to was Chris Statlander. So that's all the story you need. That's why she's getting a title shot on Sunday. That's why she's looking to avenge that last loss that she took in the ring. But I said it at the beginning of the stream. I have been really impressed. I really have been. I've really been very impressed. I see Julia Hart, whether it's on Collision or here on Dynamite, occasionally when I'll check out Rampage. And it's been very noticeable. You know, the improvement that she has made in the ring, but it's not even just the in-ring improvement where she looks more confident in what she's doing and she's trying new things. And again, the moonsault looked great, but her character work and her music is pretty fucking great. Her entrance, the whole package, it just seems to really be coming together for her. And so whoever's been working with her, and I have to assume it's been Malachi and Brody and, I don't know, Dustin Rhodes maybe, whoever's been working with her, you've seen the improvement. Now, they headline the show with the contract signing for WrestleDream with Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland out to the ring. They came back from break, and Swerve was already in the ring. And Renee introduced Hangman Page, who came down to ringside. Once both men were seated, Renee mentioned that the Elite and the Mogul affiliates were both banned from ringside. And Swerve said that he was impressed by the fire that Hangman showed over the last 2 weeks. He said it was a little too late since they were only 4 days out from WrestleDream. Swerve asked Hangman if he understood what he was walking into on Sunday. And he said that Page was facing him in Seattle, which he called the Lions Den. Swerve said he's nothing like Hangman. And Hangman is nothing like him, because what's a farmer to a mogul? What's a cowboy to an outlaw? What's a buckshot to a kill shot? I understood that reference. See, Lucha Underground will never die. Lucha Underground will live forever in some form or fashion. I like how they continue to keep it alive. So I did get that reference. For those who don't know, that's the character that Swerve used to portray on Lucha Underground. He was Killshot. So Hangman said that Swerve was fired up, and he should be. He said Swerve's previous comments stung a little bit, and he thanked him for it. He said he knew deep down inside that Swerve was right. Hangman said for a year and a half, he would come to work with a little black cloud over his head that he couldn't get rid of. And he named that little black cloud Phil. No, he didn't say that. He recalled beating Jon Moxley in a Texas death match and rejoining his friends in the Elite. Page said that whenever he started to smile, that black cloud returned and started to rain. Page said that he knew that he couldn't say or do anything about it. He said that that's over with, and he weathered the storm. He said the people deserve the best of Hangman. He said he deserves it for himself, and that's what Swerve will get at WrestleDream, and with that, he signed the contract. Swerve laughed. He said that Page was more embarrassing than Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos last week. So, easy heat in the building. Swerve said he might have mental health problems because he makes an enemy out of somebody every single day. He said he's going to take Paige's position from him at WrestleDream. Oh, and by the way, it rains a lot in Seattle. Which was a good line. Paige said Swerve wants to be a main event guy in AEW. And he said he believes he would have been the first black AEW champion had he gotten the same opportunities that Hangman got. And Hangman said, look, I don't know, maybe you would have. There's no way of knowing. We're never going to know for sure. He said that he's knocked every opportunity he's ever had, though, out of the park. So both men stood up. Page said that Swerve should want his spot, but he doesn't have what it takes to fill his boots. And Swerve smacked him across the face, and he signed the contract. And then Hangman Page, and this seemed a little excessive, but he stabbed Swerve in the hand with the pen, or with one of the pens that was on the table. And security pulled the two of them apart. I thought Paige kind of outclassed him, honestly, in this promo. There were some good lines that Swerve got off here, but I think Paige had the stronger promo. I got to give this one to him, but I'm glad they gave these two the spotlight that they did here at the end of the show. Because, you know, they're not in a championship match on Sunday. They're on the undercard. It's not the main event. There's no title on the line. But they gave their contract signing the closing segment. Well, we'll talk about what the actual closing segment was. But really, it was the closing segment, closing in-ring segment on the show. And it's just nice to see Hangman having something to do, because for so long, he was just sort of a man with no direction. And they weren't doing anything with him. And he was still hanging out with the Dark Order. And it's like, this is your former AEW World Champion. This guy should be one of the top names in the company, and you don't have anything for him. So it's nice to see that he's got something now to sink his teeth into. And the same thing with Swerve. Swerve deserves this opportunity also. If it's me, I put Swerve over in Seattle. But this is not the only match between the two. I look at this as the first in a series of matches that carries over at least a full gear. And if it were me, this would be the biggest win of Swerve's AEW career. He goes over on Sunday, if I'm the one calling. But I'm just glad that, you know, these guys have had a chance to really sink their teeth into something different. And I thought they both, especially Hangman, showed good fire here, and I enjoyed this segment. Now, the show looked like it was going to end there, but it didn't. They cut backstage in the closing moments of the show, and we see four men. They look like ninjas. Oh boy, we got ninjas back on the show. You know how I feel about that. There was a period of time here during the early pandemic days, especially in WWE, where I felt like I was talking about ninjas on these streams every single week. So we got these four guys, they're dressed in all black, they're beating up Jay White. There's a fifth man in black, and he's wearing MJF's devil mask. And he looks into the camera, and then whoever it is under the mask takes his hand, puts his hand up to the camera, and the feed goes dead. My reaction to this was, what the fuck? I don't know what to make of this. I will tell you this, though. Whoever was in the devil mask, it was not MJF. You could just look at the guy's shoulders. You could tell it was not MJF in the mask. It almost doesn't even matter who was in the mask. If they're going to do some big reveal when that day comes, it could be anybody. I mean, it's like the Black Scorpion angle in WCW. You know, it ended up being Ric Flair, but it's not like Flair was in the costume every week on TV. So who's going to be revealed as the main attacker here? I don't know. It's not going to be Adam Cole. I thought maybe there was a chance if in fact this injury was a work. If there was even the remote possibility of that, that maybe it could end up being MJF, and we find out MJF and Roddy are in cahoots. But again, it's a very real injury that he's dealing with, so it's not going to be him. But color me intrigued. That's certainly one way to leave people talking going off the air into a pay-per-view on Sunday. That right there was a cliffhanger. Could it be Roddy? It's possible. It's possible. There were more people, I think, than just Roddy and the Kingdom. Right, because there were like five of them. But it's certainly possible. I don't think it was, though. I don't think it was. And they were beating up Jay White. So, you know, what's up with that? I don't know. My brain is too fried today to sit here and start analyzing this. But I am intrigued to see where that goes. So that was Dynamite tonight. Again, I thought very strong as far as the final push. I know they have Rampage and Collision still. But the final Dynamite before WrestleDream. A lot of talking on the show, but I thought it was strong for the most part. And I thought overall it was a good show, even though there just was not as much to talk about as far as the in-ring. Now, Rampage on Friday night has the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn defending their trios titles against the Hardys and Isaiah Cassidy. Ruby Soho takes on Hikaru Shida. The winner will get an AEW Women's title shot at Title Tuesday on October 10th. I believe they're taping either Dynamite and Rampage or Dynamite and Collision on that night. It's a Tuesday. And I would imagine that has to do maybe with the baseball schedule. I don't know. But they're doing a Tuesday taping next month. Eddie Kingston defends his New Japan Strong Openweight title against Rocky Romero. So that is the lineup coming up on Friday night. No, it is not CM Punk. Vampiris in the chat says, maybe the person in the mask was CM Punk. I know CM Punk doesn't have a lot of, definition in his traps, but this did not look like CM Punk. It is not CM Punk. Collision on Saturday has Andrade El Idolo taking on Juice Robinson, and Best Friends will take on The Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett. And then we have WrestleDream on Sunday. I will give my predictions on the podcast on Sunday, if I survive long enough to do a podcast on Sunday. I'm pretty miserable. I'm not going to lie. It's been a miserable night. I'm getting through it somehow, but it has been a fucking miserable night. But here's the WrestleDream card for Sunday. Bryan Danielson against Zack Sabre Jr. Hangman Page against Swerve Strickland. We have Omega, Jericho, Ibushi against Takeshita, Guevara, and Will By God Ospreay. As Don Callis would say, MJF is going to go it alone, supposedly, against the Righteous. But again, I would watch and keep an eye out for Roddy. I think Roddy may end up being his partner. FTR defend the AEW tag team titles against Aussie Open. That is a guaranteed banger between those two teams. And it's actually 1 year to the day that they had one of the best matches all year last year at the New Japan Royal Quest show. Chris Statlander defends the TBS title against Julia Hart, Eddie Kingston, and Katsuyori Shibata for the Ring of Honor World and New Japan Strong Openweight titles. Christian Cage against Darby Allin, TNT title, 2 out of 3 falls. The Young Bucks, The Guns, Orange Cassidy and Hook, and the Lucha Bros. 4-way. Winners get a future tag team title match, and Ricky Starks takes on Wheeler Yuta. That is the lineup for Sunday, and of course the plan right now is to be live, as I usually am, after that pay-per-view for the full recap, so you can find me back here. Here's the Twitter poll. What did you think of the final Dynamite before WrestleDream? Almost 75% thumbs up, and 25% thumbs down. So, at Solomonster is where you can go cast your vote. Let me know what you thought of tonight's show. I made it. I made it. I feel like I'm about to drop dead, but I made it. I don't know how I did it, but I made it. I made it for you guys. I didn't want to leave you hanging. I hate missing streams. Oh, man. Oh, let's see what we got. But I said on Twitter, I said, what? The trivia question. What does Solomonster and LA Knight have in common? The one thing we have in common. Naughty Delicious Chicken with Flavor. If the story is true about Serena Deeb having heat with the company over TV time, honestly speaking, AEW's women's division is hot garbage. Period. Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, Fightful had a report on that this week. Casey, you know, that's an interesting point. Casey in the chat mentions, is it Hammerstone and Holiday? Roddy and the Kingdom. So Alex Hammerstone is from MLW. Richard Holiday used to be with MLW, and he was tag team partners and best friends with MJF before MJF went to AEW. And was it Hodgkin's lymphoma that he was diagnosed with? He beat cancer, and now he's making his comeback. There's said to be interest in him from WWE as well. That would be interesting, though, if they wanted to bring him into AEW and link him up with MJF. Look, everything's on the table now. You know, with Adam Cole, you know, if we assume that the description of the injury is accurate, he's going to be gone for a long time. They're going to have to come up with some interesting twists and turns in this story, and it could involve MJF maybe reverting back to his old self a little bit. You know, who knows? I wouldn't mind that. But to go back to the Serena Deeb thing for a second, she's been gone for a long time. We haven't seen her on TV. There is said to be heat on her, or there was, I don't know if there still is, said to be heat on her in the company. She claims that she's been out with an injury. According to Fightful, who talked to people in the company, there was heat because she took issue with the amount of time that she was given, I guess last year, in her matches. I guess being short, not finding out until she went to the ring that her time was being cut. And so, again, who knows who's telling the truth on this and what, but apparently she had heat for raising a stink about this. And we have not seen her on television since. At this point, I don't know that we ever will again. I have no idea. But that is the status of a Serena Deeb. Does not look like she's actually in. Naughty Delicious says, I'll be clear. I want women's wrestling in general to succeed in pro wrestling, but all elite wrestling is going backwards thinking when it comes to it. Yeah, Matthew, there's always one women's match. I don't know why you're so surprised by that. That's pretty much the story of Dynamite every week, man. The one obligatory women's match. That's basically been the way that it's been on Dynamite now for so long. GMB says, I love that Trick Williams is arguably the most over dude in NXT right now. His theme with Booker T ad-libbing might be the most catchiest thing on TV. Well, Trick Williams now is challenging for the North American title on Saturday at No Mercy. And he could very well win. I don't think he has to win. But he could very well win. The Winston Slip says, well, it is Captain Insano. Lady Fire Panda, thank you for the 20. Who is the best wrestler out of these three? Prime HBK, Prime Bret Hart, or Perk Angle? I don't know. They're all great. They're all great in different ways. I hate having to choose. I'd take all three. All three of those. Well, maybe Perk Angle, we'd get him into rehab first. But the other two, actually, Prime HBK is probably a fucking prick. So you know what? I'll go with Brett. Brett was probably the least amount of trouble of the bunch. So I'll go with Brett. I'm a Brett guy after all. Unregistered Hypercan. Says, ending felt like retribution. Please, no slapdick. Yeah, let's hope it doesn't go in that direction. Jake Finn says, stage 2, talent 0. It's that elevated ramp. Think about this. If they had the normal aisleway on that show last week, if they just had a normal level aisleway, we wouldn't even be talking about this. We wouldn't even be talking about an injury. They just happen to use that elevated ramp whenever they go to Arthur Ashe. Nick Grosso, 1999. What was that ending? Is Aces and Eights all elite? Seriously, though, I hope Adam Cole really is not hurt that badly. Hopefully he's working it, and him, Roddy, and the Kingdom are behind the attack on Jay White, and they frame MJF. Well, sadly, it does not look like that is the case. Paul Carpenter, could the Devil Ninjas be Kyle O'Reilly and the Kingdom? The show was trash tonight. Kyle O'Reilly is getting better, but Kyle O'Reilly is still not clear. Nick Grosso says, I have really been enjoying Julia Hart's improvement. She has the look, the entrance, the music, and her in-ring work is getting better every week. I think she should win the TBS title this Sunday. I wouldn't mind that. I like this run that Statlander's been on, but I wouldn't hate that. HBKC83, in your opinion, how much more difficult is it for a masked wrestler to sell, since the face is covered and they cannot really see facial expressions? Well, I mean, just as a fan speaking, just watching the show, I look at someone like Kane. Kane was masked for years, and he was great at these subtle body movements, or like when he would tilt his head a certain way, like Michael Myers or something. But even like during his matches in the ring, like, I guess when you wear a mask long enough, you just learn how to sell in other ways. So you can't convey pain if you're wearing a mask. There's certain things you just can't convey because your face is covered. But I think there are other ways, with your body language, that you could convey certain emotions. But it's a lot more difficult. I mean, there's just certain things you can't do because you're hidden away under a mask. Paul Carpenter says CM Cole. Stephen Chappa, thank you for that $30 Bully the Clown. Been too long, but the circus is in town. Can Tony replicate the Vipers? The Viper scene now. The Wipers? Who with the Wipers? Who with the Wipers? We should do like a Sopranos podcast. Actually, they already do a Sopranos podcast, I think, with the people who were on the Sopranos. EJ Slemp. Rest in peace, Brooks Robinson, the greatest defensive player in MLB history and one of the classiest and nicest legends in all of sports. Indeed. I was sad to hear that this week. Zachariah says, I was thinking about this for Fastlane. Yes, another Judgment Day versus Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Cody Rhodes, I know. But it's more of a setup for Survivor Series. JD McDonagh runs in to get the win for the Judgment Day, and Priest accepts McDonagh. I doubt Cody is teaming with Cena. No, LA Knight is teaming with Cena. That's already a done deal. LA Knight is going to be John Cena's partner at Fastlane. As far as the match that you just proposed, I mean, my God, how many times, you know, how many times are we supposed to see it? I get what you're saying, though, because I do think we're headed towards a War Games match where it'll be Cody and Jey Uso and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against Balor, Priest, Dominic, and McDonagh. I think that's going to be the setup for War Games, and they have to set it up somehow, but Jesus, I mean, how many fucking times do we need to see different permutations of this match? I feel like I'm living in some sort of simulation here. It's ridiculous. Marcus Metcalf, if I'm booking, I'm figuring a way to get the TNT title on Swerve and the international title on Ricky Starks. I've said before, the international title should go from Rey Fénix either to Takeshita or Ricky Starks. One of those two. M. Mills says, feel better. Thank you, Michelle. That's very kind of you. We've got Dylan Hensley, our head trainer and promoter. Dylan is always checking in with updates on his wrestling training. Our head trainer and promoter got onto us for forgetting the fundamentals. Just goes to show that no matter how much you know, the basics are important. That sounds like a very smart head trainer. He knows what he's talking about. Listen to what he tells you. Without the fundamentals, you have nothing. You can say that about all sports. Your baseball player, football player, you've always got to have the fundamentals down. That's why they're sending Jade Cargill to the Performance Center. Work on her fundamentals. Zachariah says, what's your opinion on Malachi? I always laugh when he spells it. Malachi's video. Is this another Miro situation, or does he really want out of AEW? Mysterious figure is Tony Khan. It was him all along. I saw what he's referring to is a video that Malachi Black posted on his Instagram stories, addressing these rumors, speculation that he's been out or he's not doing singles matches because of his back injury. And he claims that it is not a back injury. His back is fine. He's not hurt. And in fact, I think he just did a singles match on the Indies a few weeks ago. But what's very telling is that in the video, when he says, how come I'm not doing more singles matches? His answer is, I don't know. Almost like, why don't you talk to the guy in charge? You know, he doesn't know. But it didn't strike me as something where, you know, he's trying to get out. I do think that when his contract is up, he would be a prime candidate to go back to WWE. I don't know when his deal is up. But I don't think he's asking out of his contract or anything like that. But I did think it was very telling that he said, you know, as far as why do I not do more singles matches? He goes, I don't know. But it has nothing to do with an injury. D. Gibbs, the fact that Tony Khan doesn't utilize Athena with the top women bothers me. He did Jade the same way. Yeah, look, I mean, it's a shame that Athena is being hidden away behind a paywall on a product that probably very few people watch. You know, it feels like her prime here is being wasted. I want to see her on AEW television. I want to see her mixing it up with people like Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, and, you know, Toni Storm, and all these people that she doesn't have a chance to work with in Ring of Honor. She's been in Ring of Honor for a long time. At some point, it's like, when is enough enough? You know, it's like, get her off that show and get her on Dynamite. Get her on Collision. She's just wasting away. Chris AXC, if Edge comes into AEW, does he still use Metalingus? How can he not? I'm sure Tony Khan would have no issue buying the rights to the song, so I agree. He won't be able to call himself Edge. We've talked about this before. He can call himself Wedge. He can call himself Ledge. Sledge. But the song, yeah, I think Tony Khan would make a play for the song. Not like it's a WWE song. WWE probably licensed it, so Tony Khan could do the same thing. It's like Punk using Cult of Personality. Oz and Glorious, are the masked folks attacking Jay White Bullet Club Japan people? I hadn't thought about that. Oh, you're talking about like David Finlay and all them? I don't know. I mean, he was kind of excommunicated from there, so I don't think so. Samoan fan, Noah Mark told me you have below the belt deeds. I don't know what the hell that means. Thank you, Samoan fan. Jesus. Thank you, Samoan. Some of you are very weird. Edge is going to be called Curve. It's going to be called Corner. Oh, man. Well, thank you again for sticking it out with me. I am very sick, although better now than I was a few hours ago. So I wanted to make sure I did this stream, but I'm not feeling great. So, but I feel better now that I got to hang out with you guys. And I actually got to interact with people today instead of laying in bed all day. So let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
My gift to you. Let's be the booker. Be our Wrestle Dream on Sunday. I want to book some matches of my own for my own paper. How about that? Let's book our own Wrestle Dream card. All right, our Wrestle Dream card. Samoan fan says you should really burn Noah's hat after this. See, that I agree with. That I agree with. I'll have to consider that. We begin with Bobby Lashley, or as Brock Lesnar would say, Bobby, former WWE champion. Bobby Lashley. Not a bad way to start. It's going to be Bobby Lashley. Oh my God. What is that? This is Jericho in some weird phase of his career when he was the Painmaker in New Japan. Well, look, I mean, it kind of gives Dad Bod a new meaning. He's flexing those pecs. There he is. The Painmaker and Bobby Lashley. See, I don't want the Painmaker against Bobby Lashley. This version of Jericho is not the one that I want against Bobby Lashley. I don't even know what I'm looking at. Oh, boy. Get that off my screen. All right. Oh, man. All right. On the women's side, we begin with Xia Li, who somehow survived the WWE cuts, even though they do absolutely nothing with her. I'll never understand that. I'll never understand calling somebody up to the main roster and then doing just fuck all with them. I just don't get that. Those main roster opportunities should be reserved for the best of the best, you know, and the people that you're going to do something with. Even if she just is on TV losing most of her matches. She's not even on TV. She's not like main event. Xia Li one-on-one with Ronda Rousey. I don't want Ronda Rousey on my Wrestle Dream show. The hell out of here with that. Get out of here with that. Thank you, Yachiru. I appreciate that. Tag team Be the Booker. We begin. Well, look at that. With the Lucha Bros. Rey Fénix and Penta. Former AEW Tag Team Champions. And I believe Ring of Honor too, right? Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. Lucha Bros getting into the ring with the Dream Team of Greg Valentine and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. What the hell? That's a unique enough match. I want to see Greg Valentine selling for Rey Fénix. You think he would? What a match that is. The Dream Team. Wrestle Nightmare, yeah. We just booked Wrestle Nightmare. Well, there's a reason why I'm booking here and Tony Khan is booking the actual show. Oz and Glorious. Actually, Juan. Hey, Juan Ocampo says, have not been on the streams lately. Take care of your mentals and your bread. I love you guys. Even if I'm not on here and talking as much, take care. Take care of your mentals and your bread. Okay. Juan, I hope you're good. Thank you for checking in. Oz and Glorious. Yuta called Starks whiny, entitled, and a moaner. Spot on, in my opinion. Tony Khan should not keep investing in this guy if he's giving WWE the eyes like he is. Well, how exactly is he giving WWE the eyes? I would like to know. What exactly does that mean? Is he not allowed to acknowledge their existence at all? Does that automatically mean he's looking to leave? I think he's a great candidate to leave. I think there's a very good chance he'll leave when his contract is up. But I don't know what you mean by giving WWE the eyes like he is. KD. Long time no chat. That three-way match to get an opponent for Fénix is still an open challenge. Well, you know, they love their open challenges. You know this already. It is still an open challenge. Why can't AEW build up an actual opponent for the title? It's been going on since your doppelganger won it. Hope you feel better. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they love their open challenges. What else is there to say? Makes it easier for them to book. Lazier, yes. that's what they like to do. We get into WWE too. It's not just an AEW problem. It's a wrestling thing now. Just that's the way things are now. Things now, everything is an open challenge. We have Becky Lynch doing open challenges for the NXT Women's title. That's just how it is now. Zacharias says one last five spot just to say I sure do miss Jamie Hayter. I really like her in ring work, and might I add, she is so pretty. I am drinking the Haterade. Well, there's another injury that threw a monkey wrench into their plans, and she had to miss the Wembley show. It sucks. You know, it just sucks. When these injuries happen, it just ruins everything. And Samoan fan, one day you'll get Rey Fénix against Giant Gonzalez. And I will have my finger on the buzzer. So fast your head will spin. If that day ever comes. Thank you guys for hanging out with me on a Wednesday night. Sorry that I was not at my best here, but doing the best I can. Hopefully I will get better in the days ahead. We got a pay-per-view on Sunday night, a podcast this weekend. I got to be okay. But thank you. I will see you, hopefully, fingers crossed. The plan is to see you live back here for SmackDown or after SmackDown on Friday night. That is the plan. There's not going to be a No Mercy review, NXT No Mercy. I will watch the show. I'll just talk about it on the podcast on Sunday. So the plan is SmackDown stream Friday night, Wrestle Dream stream on Sunday. So that is the plan. Until then, be well, stay safe, stay healthy, and I will see you back here for the SmackDown stream, hopefully, on Friday night. Until then, take care, guys.